This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, my name is Mary McConnell. This is the third hour of USA Today. This is Thursday. It's May the 16th, 2024. And this is from Radio Reading Services of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. In this hour, I will read the TV listings and the obituary notices, both from the Cincinnati Inquirer. And we're also going to touch on the life section of USA Today. Let's kick things off with this evening's television schedule. And we start at 7 o'clock with WLWT, that's Channel 5. And from 7 to 7:30, they have local news. 7:30 till 8, it's Access Hollywood, Law and Order. That's on from 8 until 9 o'clock on Channel 5. Law and Order SVU is on from 9 until 10. Law and Order Organized Crime runs from 10 to 11. At 11 o'clock, it's local news, again on Channel 5. And at 11:30, we have The Tonight Show. On WCPO, that's ABC, we have Channel 9 local news from 7 to 7:30. At 7:30 until 8, it's Extra. Coming up from 8 until 9 o'clock, we have 911. 9 until 10 o'clock, it's Grey's Anatomy. Coming up from 10 until 11, it's Station 19. Local news is on from 11 to 11:30, again on WCPO Channel 9. And at 11:30, it's Jimmy Kimmel Live. Looking at WKRC, that's Channel 12, CBS affiliate, it's Inside Edition from 7 to 7:30. 7:30 till 8, it's Entertainment Tonight. We have Young Sheldon. That's on from 8 to 8:30. Ghosts is on from 8:30 until 9 o'clock. 9 until 10, So Help Me Todd. 10 until 11 o'clock, it's Elsbeth. Local 12 News is on from 11 to 11:30. And then comes The Late Show. On CINCW, we have Family Matters from 7 to 7:30 and again from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock, it's Patty Stanger, The Matchmaker, runs till 9. Lovers and Liars is on from 9 until 10 o'clock. Then comes The National Desk from 10 to 11. And The National Desk continues from 11 until midnight. On WXIX, that's Channel 19, 7 to 7:30, it's Wheel of Fortune. 7:30 until 8 o'clock, we have Jeopardy. Next Level Chef, that's on from 8 until 9. Lego Masters is on from 9 until 10 o'clock. Fox 19 News at 10 goes from 10 to 11 o'clock. Local news continues on Channel 19 from 11 to 11:30. And then comes Friends. On WCET, that's Channel 48, it's the PBS NewsHour from 7 until 8 o'clock. This Old House is on from 8 to 8:30. Ask This Old House from 8:30 until 9. 9 until 10, it's Marilyn. Masterpiece is on from 10 to 11. And then I'm a Poor in Company from 11 till midnight. On MyNet, that's TV 64, Big Bang Theory, 7 to 7:30. Young Sheldon, 7:30 until 8. 8 until 9 o'clock, we have Dateline. Chicago PD is on from 9 until 10. Local 12 News is on from 10 to 10:30. But again, this is on Channel 64. And then at 10:30 on 64, it's The Big Bang Theory until 11. Young Sheldon, 11 to 11:30. And Two and a Half Men from 11:30 until midnight. On NBC, Channel 2 Inside Edition runs from 7 to 7:30. That's followed by Jeopardy from 7:30 until 8. We have Law and Order from 8 till 9. Law and Order SVU from 9 until 10. Law and Order Organized Crime runs from 10 to 11. Then comes the news from 11 to 11:30, followed by The Tonight Show. On Channel 7, that's CBS, it's Wheel of Fortune from 7 to 7:30. Then we have E.T. from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. Young Sheldon's on from 8 to 8:30. Ghosts from 8:30 until 9. So Help Me Todd follows from 9 until 10. Elsbeth is on from 10 until 11. Then comes the news from 11 to 11:30, and it's followed by The Late Show. On PBS, Channel 14, we have DW News from 7 to 7:30. More news from 7:30 until 8. Doc Martin runs from 8 until 9. We have Midsummer from 9 until 9:30. 9:30 till 10:30, it's Midsummer Murders. At 10:30, it's Islands. That goes to 11. At 11 o'clock, again on Channel 14, we have BBC World News and then DW News at 11:30. On Channel 16, PBS again, it's the BBC News from 7 to 7:30. Curious from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. House is on from 8 to 8:30. Ask This Old House from 8:30 till 9. Antique Roadshow, it's on from 9 until 10 o'clock. Photographic Justice, it's on from 10 to 11. They're going to announce programming from 11 to 11:30, but that's followed by Legacy. Again, this on Channel 16. Now we're going to look at Channel 22. That's the ABC affiliate and its Family Feud from 7 to 7:30 and again from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. 911 is on from 8 until 9. Grey's Anatomy from 9 till 10. We have Station 19 from 10 to 11. Then comes News from 11 to 11:30 and it's followed by Jimmy Kimmel. On Fox 22.2, Big Bang Theory, it's on from 7 to 7:30 and again from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. We have Next Level Chef from 8 until 9. Then comes Lego Masters from 9 until 10. 10 to 11, it's News. 11 o'clock, iCrimes. 11:30, Family. That goes to midnight. On CW, Young Sheldon, that's on from 7 to 7:30. Again, this is Channel 26. Young Sheldon continues from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. Then comes Patty Stanger, the matchmaker. It's on from 8 till 9. Lovers and Liars is on from 9 till 10. We have the News from 10 to 10:30 and again from 10:30 to 11. And then a couple of versions of Friends, one from 11 to 11:30 and the second from 11:30 till midnight. On Channel 43 ION, we have Sue Thomas, FBI, 7 till 8 o'clock. Sue Thomas, FBI, is on from 8 until 9, again from 9 till 10, from 10 to 11. And they wrap things up with more Sue Thomas, FBI, from 11 until midnight. And we're going to wrap things up with Channel 54, that's a PBS affiliate. And from 7 until 8 o'clock, it's the PBS NewsHour. Antique Roadshow, it's on from 8 until 9. Doc Martin is on from 9 until 10. 10 o'clock, Father Brown to 11. BBC World News, 11 to 11:30. And they wrap things up with Kentucky News from 11:30 until midnight. And we continue with the Cincinnati Inquirer, taking a look at the obituaries. Again, this is for May 16th. And David Amos was 66 of Loveland. He passed away on the 13th of May. Tuff Schildmeyer Funeral Home handling the funeral. Donna Marie Bender was 76 of Cincinnati. She died on the 12th of May. Nagel, Klebb, and Eilendorf handling the arrangements. Elvira C. Delp was 77. She died on the 13th, Hodop Funeral Home handling the arrangements. Steve Russell was 74 of Milford. He passed away on the 11th of May. Evans Funeral Home handling his funeral. Nancy Jeffrey Stange was 71 of Cincinnati, and she died on May the 12th, Spring Grove handling the arrangements. And finally, Paula Tompkins was 69. She ended up in Belmont, North Carolina, and she died on the 13th of May. And now we're going to take a look at the life section of USA Today. And we're going to start things off with an article. And it's a new biopic brings singer Winehouse back to life. In Back to Black, Marissa Abella transforms into ill-fated performer, including taking on uncanny vocal resemblances. This is about movies, and Winehouse roars back to life in Back to Black biopic is the title of this article. Marco Della Cava writes this again for USA Today. Filmmaker Sam Taylor Johnson was eager to cast British actress Marissa Abella as the ill-fated singer Amy Winehouse in her biopic, Back to Black, which is in theaters beginning Friday. Then she got some shocking news. Abella didn't sing. She said to me, "By the way, how much singing is there in this movie?" Taylor Johnson recalls with a laugh, "I said, well, quite a lot." But the director, she directed Nowhere Boy, figured if Abella, 27, could focus on embodying Amy on a soul level, then lip syncing to Winehouse's famously unique voice would take care of the rest. In the end, that wasn't necessary. Thanks to incessant work with a vocal coach, Abella wound up mimicking Winehouse so well that even diehard fans will be hard-pressed to tell the two apart. "I had no sense of my own voice, so I could become a chameleon," says Abella. Amy had one of the most distinctive voices ever, so I had to listen hard to her influences and patterns, that in order to get close. Abella did the work. The Royal Academy of Dramatic Art graduate who plays Yasmin in HBO's Industry and Teen Talk Barbie in Barbie listened to Winehouse's hits as a preteen, but dove in when she landed this role, moving to Camden, Winehouse's home turf, and frequenting her old nightclub haunts. She even lost weight carefully to play the drug-out Amy. I was a big Amy fan, but I was young, she says. Valerie was my song in childhood, but as an adult woman, I can truly understand what is behind songs like Wake Up Alone. My respect for her now as an artist and songwriter is immense. Her uncanny vocal resemblance makes Back to Black, also the title of Winehouse's iconic album, a compelling 2 hours. But at its core, the movie aims to serve less as a greatest hit vehicle and more as a means to understand Winehouse's tragic life. The child of divorce, Winehouse poured her conflicted emotions into songwriting. A popular singer at London neighborhood pubs, Winehouse had by age 19 already been signed to Simon Fuller's 19 Management. That's the same outfit that shot the Spice Girls to fame. A year later, in 2003, she released her debut album, Frank. 7 years later, the six-time Grammy winner would be dead from alcohol poisoning. What happened in those intervening years is what Back to Black exposes with unflinching candor. Mostly, it's the star-crossed lover story of Winehouse and Blake Field Civil, who's played by Jack O'Connell, whom she married in 2007. The relationship was passionate, volatile, and inextricably linked to the abuse of drugs and alcohol. Nevertheless, Winehouse's commitment never flagged. Eventually, though, his did. After a stint in rehab during a jail sentence, Felder Civil broke off with Winehouse and had a baby with another woman, just as his ex, also finally sober and now world famous, thanks to Rehab, the ironic global hit off Back to Black. Emotionally undone by his new life, Winehouse spiraled again. Eventually, her body gave out. While plenty of media accounts and a thorough Winehouse documentary, 2015's Amy, paint Felder Civil and Amy's cab-driving father, Mitch, who's played by Eddie Marsan, as toxic forces, Taylor Johnson decided to view both differently. It was clear to me that I had to look at Blake and her father with love because I needed the audience to see what Amy saw in them, she says. Taylor Johnson met with Winehouse's parents while preparing for the film, although she did not need their approval to make it. During one meeting, she asked Amy's mother, Janice Winehouse Collins, who's played by Juliet Cohen, if she liked her former son-in-law. She answered no. But I didn't not like him either. He showed Amy love, and that was important to Janice, she says. As for Mitch Winehouse, there is a scene in the movie where after taking over Amy's career, he is implored by family members to get his daughter into rehab. He rebuffs the request. I wanted people to think more broadly about what it really might be like to parent a child with an addiction, says Taylor Johnson. Do you turn a blind eye, hoping that by performing, Amy rediscovers her love of life? Or do you intervene? It's complicated. It's easy to just say, who's to blame? Taylor Johnson says that while Winehouse's parents haven't told her what they think of her film, they have requested numerous screenings for family and friends. I think they've warmed up to it, she says. Abella also met with the Winehouse family. My impression was that they were still deeply grieving Amy's loss, she says. Still, the family eagerly provided the actress with insights into Winehouse's influences, which included jazz greats such as Sarah Vaughan, Billie Holiday, and Dinah Washington. Abella started her vocal training trying to sing like those legends so that I could then see how Amy would add her own flavor to their work, she says. She switched her vocal register so much, really using her voice like a jazz instrument, she'd go from something nasal and clipped to super chesty and big. Abella also got the full Winehouse treatment, physically wrapping her hair in a huge 60s beehive and getting temporary versions of Winehouse's innumerable tattoos, which included a pinup girl, horseshoe, and a feather. "With all those tattoos, I felt like a different person, honestly," says Abella. "It felt cool. But more than that, you understood how little fear Amy had. She would feel things and then just get that put on her body in that moment, big and in color." Transforming into Winehouse turned Abella into a superfan who can reel off the star's catalog in a flash. Her favorite Winehouse tune? Well, that would be "Love is a Losing Game," she says. It's a song where the music and lyrics speak to a time when she was the most vulnerable and honest. "Just don't ask her to sing it. She doesn't do the human jukebox thing. Thank you very much. My goal in playing her was about getting at who she was and how hard she loved," said Abella. "So to sing a few bars of Rehab without the whole context behind it wouldn't make any sense to me. And trust me, it'd likely be terrible. A valid point, but we're not buying it." Now we're going to go to Lifeline and Making Waves. Again, this is from today's USA Today Live section. Victoria's Secret Show. Okay, the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show is plotting a comeback. The retailer announced Wednesday its annual fashion show, which hasn't been held since 2018, will officially return later this fall. A Victoria's Secret spokesperson said the 2024 event will deliver precisely what our customers have been asking for: the glamour, runway, fashion, fun, wings, and entertainment, all through a powerful modern lens reflecting exactly who we are today. Again, it is May 16th, 2024. Is it your birthday today? Well, look who's celebrating birthdays with you. Danny Trejo is 80, Pierce Bronson is 71, and Megan Fox turns 38 years old today. And now we're going to look at today's horoscopes, and we're going to start things off with Aries. And if you are an Aries, that, of course, is March 21st to April the 19th. Unsure of how to proceed, well, impulsive decisions risk derailing a solid plan. If you're a Taurus, April 20th to May the 20th, to reveal your feelings or keep them hidden. Self-expression is a challenge today. For Gemini, May 21st to June 21st, using your energy unwisely, you're torn between leading the charge and staying in bed. For Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd, misreading the room, the moon's clash with Mars stirs up trouble on the job. Avoid unfair accusations. For Leo, that's July 23rd to August 22nd, what are you really mad about? Your anger is directed at the wrong target. For Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd, wrestling with impatience as the moon and Mars clash, keeping your cool is a struggle. If you're a Libra, September 23rd to October 23rd, to address or avoid the problem. Resolving a relationship dispute requires consistency. If you're a Scorpio, October 24th to November 21st, flying solo or with a team, you want the perks of both without the drawbacks. If you're a Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st, you wear your heart on your sleeve as the moon and Mars clash. That could be bad for business. For Capricorn, that's December 22nd to January the 19th, steamrolling another's feelings as the moon and Mars clash, you're quick with insults and lousy with apologies today. If you're an Aquarius, January 20th to February the 18th, picking fights, insecurities provoke verbal mudslinging. Don't drag someone's good name. And wrapping things up with Pisces, that's February 19th to March the 20th, making a selfish decision, well, as the moon and Mars clash, achieving personal desires trumps the insensitive to compromise. And we're going to do a streaming preview right now. And again, this is from USA Today's Life section. And this article is entitled, Penelope Makes the Most of Bridgerton. Smell the flowers, drink the lemonade, and break out the Empire waistlines because Netflix's Bridgerton is finally back. It has been 2 long years since we last visited Regency Britain with its tales of love, gossip, and the marriage march. Fans got a spinoff with Queen Charlotte last year to tide them over. Season 3 follows the slightly star-crossed love affair between Penelope Featherington, who's played by Nicola Coughlan, and Colin Bridgerton, who's played by Luke Newton. And just like the other Bridgerton seasons and love stories, all the star-crossed parts come from self-inflicted and other issues. Was it worth the wait for the romance to return? Probably, if you're more than a casual fan, but 3 seasons in, it's clear that Bridgerton will never recreate the magic of its first, which had all the right amounts of love, sex, intrigue, duels, honor, and shirtless men to create a phenomenon when it premiered back in December of 2020. Season 2 was fine, and Season 3, which is now streaming, is better. It's funnier, the sex is more frequent, if not hotter, and it makes Coughlan a bona fide star. The new episodes, 4 now streaming, 4 more due June the 13th, are beautiful, smart, and charming. If the series is not transcendent, that's okay. Bridgerton suffers by comparison to itself, but it's not the end of the world or of the season, as Lady Whistledown would say. Our third bout, with the ton, as the aristocracy calls itself, sees a new couple taking the spotlight. Technically, it's Colin Bridgerton's year, since he is a member of the titular family falling in love. But the season belongs to Coughlan's Penelope, the youngest and most overlooked Featherington sister. Penelope has used her wallflower status at every ball and promenade to create a business writing a successful gossip rag under the pseudonym Lady Whistledown, narrated by Julie Andrews. She passes judgment on her subjects and angering and intriguing the queen, who's played by Golda Rosenfeld. But it's getting harder to stay anonymous. Penelope's best friend, Eloise Bridgerton, who's played by Claudia Jesse, ended their friendship in season 2 when she found out about Penelope's side hustle. Well, here comes season 3. Penelope turns her attention to her own marriage prospects for the first time, giving up the long-standing crush she's had on Colin and trying desperately to get out of her mother's house. But it turns out Penelope wasn't just overlooked because of the garish dresses her mother made her wear. She's also awkward and nervous at parties, prone to turn off potential suitors rather than entice them. It's here Colin swoops in to save the day, offering her Pygmalion-style lessons in a charm offensive. He does so because he's desperate to maintain their friendship after he once turned off by insulting her. But will he discover he wants to be more than friends? And what will he do if he finds out she's Whistledown? Bridgerton is based on a series of romance novels by Julia Quinn, so it's not hard to figure out what will happen to Penelope and Colin. But the skill in the genre is titillating and intriguing the audience on the way to happily ever after. The burden of that task falls squarely on Coughlan, and she carries the season in her delicately gloved hands, even getting her own She's All That style stairway entrance after a makeover. Take that, Freddie Prinze Jr. She succeeds, unfortunately, without much help from the wooden Newton. Coughlan is immensely talented. That has been obvious since her turn in Netflix's aggressively delightful Northern Ireland series, Derry Girls. But the poor woman shouldn't have to be working this hard. Newton may have a good smoldering look, but in most scenes he gives her absolutely nothing. Less than nothing, Coughlan may as well be putting on a one-woman show. If season 2 was a bit of a wet blanket or wet frilly men's shirt for fans of the steamier scenes, season 3 immediately tries to course correct by loading up the sex and nudity. But new executive producer Jess Bronwell and the writers seem to come from the Game of Thrones school of any sex makes a scene better without thinking too hard about what makes sex compelling in a drama. There are too many half-naked prostitutes and not enough romantic tension building. By episode 4, though, the lust and love all start to get into something with sparks. It's enough to forgive more than one brothel threesome scene, almost. Some secondary plots in the season are less compelling. Sixth, Bridgerton's sibling, Francesca, who's played by Hannah Dodd, makes her debut on the social scene, although she'd rather play piano than attend a ball. Boxer Will Mondrath, who's played by Martins in Maigby, and his wife Alice, played by Emma Naomi, get a surprising ticket into high society and a crash course on manners. And Bridgerton matriarch Lady Violet, who's played by Ruth Gemmell, may get her own second chance at love. As sweet as Francesca's story ends, it has so many echoes of Daphne's, who's played by Phoebe de Nevers from season 1, that it feels like a rehash. Perhaps that's why the producers decided to slot the story in this year rather than giving Francesca her own future season. In early episodes, the Mondriches are most interesting side characters, but they're not fully explored. Violet, too, could use more depth and screen time. But it all inevitably comes back to Penelope and Colin. Colin has been rather bland in the first 2 seasons, and regretfully, Newton's performance hasn't done much to give him life. But through sheer will and a lot of meaningful glances, Coughlin makes Penelope and Colin worth your emotional investment. After all, Lady Whistledown should have her own romance worth gossiping about. As we continue with USA Today's Life section, Kathy Lee, daughter Cassidy, are mad for Mother's Day. In USA Today's The Essentials, the Giffords describe the importance of family. This article is entitled, Kathy Lee and Cassidy Share Mother's Day Moments. Ralphie Aversa writes this for USA Today. In a new series, there were a few new faces at Kathy Lee Gifford's Mother's Day party. The Emmy-winning TV host, who is 70, said hello to 2 more grandchildren this year. Her son Cody and his wife Erica welcomed their second child, son Ford, last November. They also have a son Frank, who was born in 2022. And Gifford's daughter Cassidy, who is 30, welcomed her first child, Finn, whose husband, Ben Wirda, last June. Cassidy celebrated her first Mother's Day as a mom on Sunday. The mother-daughter duo also marked a professional milestone. Cassidy is in the cast of Amazon Prime Video's faith-based series, The Baxters, on which her mother guest stars. All 3 seasons are currently streaming. While returning to New York to promote the series, the Giffords talked about what would make their Mother's Day special. Tips for priceless Mother's Day gifts. I feel like it would depend on who's giving the gift, Cassidy says when asked about a best gift. Because if it's your husband, I feel like I would be like, just let Mama sleep in, just bring me some coffee. While Cassidy's latest acting gig is viewable via Amazon on app, doesn't come to mind when she thinks of the ideal Mother's Day gifts. I don't think the best gift is anything material, she says. Let's look at the app that Kathy Lee is thankful for. As Cassidy thinks back to past Mother's Day, she realizes that her mother has never been one for literal gifts. Kathy Lee agrees and notes that what she looks forward to is time. I love the fact that there's FaceTiming now, Gifford says. That makes my day every day because that didn't exist when I was growing up. So the minute that I see Cassie or Cody or Erica is FaceTiming me, I'm like, oh, what a gift. Cassidy and her husband live near Gifford in Nashville, Tennessee. Cody and his family live in Connecticut. Kathy Lee keeps her hope through family and faith. Gifford talks about time with reverence. It is the most precious thing we have because you never know when you're going to run out of it, she continues, before recalling when her husband Frank died in 2015. Frank was up and getting ready for church that morning that he passed away, she says, and I went upstairs to get ready too, and came back down, and he was gone. And Cody was helping me with him, and he said, "Mom, look, he's smiling." And I said, "He saw Jesus, and Jesus took his breath away." When you have faith in something as strong as we do, and you're grateful for it, you have hope. And keep in mind, there is always hope. Now we're going to take a look at things that get emotional behind the scenes at Young Sheldon. We track the growing and going pains as the CBS sitcom comes to an end. And this article is entitled, "Tears and Tissues as Sheldon Leaves Home." Brian Alexander writes this for USA Today. Sitting on a paint-chipped porch chair overlooking the backyard of his fake childhood home, Young Sheldon star Ian Armitage takes a moment to savor the green grass. Actually, there are more sizable pockets of dirt than grass outside the Cooper family's humble East Texas abode, which was created on Warner Brothers' soundstage. Still, it's a home for Armitage, who's 15, who was just 8 in 2017 when he started playing the Pinesides version of Jim Parsons' adult genius, Sheldon Cooper, in the prequel spinoff of CBS's hit The Big Bang Theory. "I used to fit in those swings," he says, eyeing the faded metal backyard swing set. "Now I'm too large. I tried it again 2 hours ago. I didn't tip it over, so I'm counting that as a victory, but I rocked the swing set, so it's a little unsafe for me now." But childhood and TV shows inevitably come to an end. Armitage soaks it all in while taking a break from shooting some of the final scenes for the May 16th, tonight's hour-long series finale, which is going to be at 8 o'clock. Just as the adult Sheldon reminisced on Big Bang Theory, the 14-year-old Sheldon finally will leave East Texas for California Institute of Technology. Both franchise lore and Armitage's age provided a cap for the prequel series and the reason to end it after 7 seasons, says Sheldon co-creator and executive producer Chuck Lorre. In the Big Bang universe, Sheldon goes to Caltech at 14. Even if we ignored that, the show is called Young Sheldon, and that's not true anymore, says Lorre. "We got to watch this guy grow up, and it was wonderful. It's heartbreaking in the end, even though it was the right story decision. It just felt like the right time. But it didn't make it any less emotional." Armitage, a trooper ever since CBS announced the end was nigh last November, is not prone to tears, even on the second to the last day of shooting. "I feel weirdly calm," he says. "I'm definitely going to miss being here, but I feel so lucky and grateful at the same time. So it all swirls together in my mind and they cancel each other out. I'm definitely sad, but I think it's a hit a lot of other people harder than it's hit me." That's for sure. During one break, Annie Potts, who plays Sheldon's Meemaw, wanders through the ranch-style Cooper house with Reagan Rafford, who plays Missy Cooper, admiring family wall photos as if for the last time. Holly Revard, Reagan's mother, doesn't hide her tears or the balled-up Kleenex in her hand, watching the monitor as her daughter shoots scenes in Sheldon's packed-up bedroom. Matt Hobby, who finished shooting his final scene as Pastor Jeff earlier in the week, has solemnly returned to show his support for the rest of the cast. In the writer's room, executive producer Stephen Molaro and Steve Holland, both veterans of Big Bang Theory, which ended its 12-year season run in 2019, have a tissue box nearby. "We've both been through this on Big Bang as well, so many lasts, the last day for this character, and so on. Each day, I think, maybe I'll get less emotional. Then I get emotional all over again," says Molaro. All the writers were crying in the writer's room coming to the end. "It's been a ride," says Holland. "It's been really exciting to see these scenes play out. There have been some emotionally difficult scenes. These last couple of episodes, the tissue box came in handy." Notably difficult was the May 9th episode, which featured the death of George Cooper Sr., who's played by Lance Barber. The flawed but lovable father's off-screen heart attack death was preordained, a pivotal event older Sheldon discussed in The Big Bang Theory. Obviously, Sheldon and his family were stunned by the news as the episode ended. Well, what's going to happen in the finale? Well, the series finale starts with the Cooper family's shock and grief over the loss and then strives for the pitch-perfect upbeat series ending that takes place 27 days after George's funeral. Jim Parsons, who narrates young Sheldon, reprises his role for the finale along with Maheen Balik, now Sheldon's wife and mother of their two children. After the funeral, Molaro says, we go to a more uplifting area and give the characters a chance to move on. We still have the ultimate moment where Sheldon goes to Caltech and starts his new life, so there was a way for us to pull out of the nosedive of George's death and leave on a brighter note. Many scenes Armitage shoots on this April day in fall, meticulously boxing up his prized train collection for college, a callback to the young Sheldon pilot. The first scenes of our show ever were of Sheldon's trains. We opened the series on my historical facsimile trains going around the tracks, says Armitage. And now, 7 seasons later, I'm packing up my trains. It's a great symbol. The Big Bang franchise continues this fall with another prequel spinoff following older brother George, who's played by Montana Jordan, and his wife Emily Osmith in George and Mandy's first marriage. But it's the end of the line for young Sheldon. While sticking the series landing is tough, the team is cautiously confident that they've done right by everybody with the finale. We've thought about it for a long time, about how to end the show. There's a lot of pressure there, says Molaro. We care about these characters as if they're real people, and we wanted to feel satisfying and do right by them as best we could. And now we're going to take a look at the best-selling books for this past week, according to USA Today. We're going to start with number 10, You Never Know, a Memoir. Tom Selleck writes that one. Again, number 10. Coming in 9, 5 Broken Blades by Maya Corland. A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah Moss comes in at number 8. Number 7, This Summer Will Be Different from Carly Fortune. Coming in number 6, No Going Back, The Truth on What's Wrong with Politics and How We Move America Forward. Christy Noem writes that. Coming in number 5, Dog Man, The Scarlet Shutter, and that is written by Dave Pilkey, and again it comes in number 5. Number 4, Chainsaw Man, Volume 15 by Tatsuki Fujimoto. Number 3, The Demon of Unrest, a saga of hubris, heartbreak, and heroism at the dawn of the Civil War. That is penned by Eric Larson. Funny Story by Emily Henry comes 2. And The Woman comes in number 1. And that is written by Kristen Hanna. And now we're going to continue and go to usatoday.com. And again, we're going to focus on the life section from today's edition. And we're going to kick things off with an article on health and wellness. And this is entitled, It's Tick Season. How is Lyme Disease Transmitted? Here is what you need to know. And this article is written by Delaney Northaft. Again, this is for USA Today. With summer fast approaching, many of us are looking forward to getting out into nature to enjoy the fresh air and beautiful scenery. Turns out some insects have the same idea. The Venn diagram between human outdoor activity and nymphal or baby tick activity has significantly overlapped. This creates a perfect storm for a surge in Lyme disease, which is curable for most people. An article published in the American Journal of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene says that Lyme disease peaks during the summer months when humans are most active outdoors and when nymphal ticks start to emerge. Here's what you need to know about the mysterious illness. Well, what exactly is Lyme disease? Someone may contract Lyme disease if they are bitten by a tick. The symptoms can be wide-ranging. Lyme disease is a tick-borne illness caused by the bacteria Borrelia burgdorferi. Typical symptoms include a skin rash, fever, headache, and fatigue. Most patients recover after the infection, but some patients, about 10 to 20%, develop long-term symptoms, which include fatigue, body aches, and difficulty thinking that are often debilitating and life-altering. So says Dr. Britt Adair, a rheumatologist and researcher at Johns Hopkins Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland, and also the author of a recently published review paper on the chronic symptoms and complications that are associated with Lyme disease. Is Lyme disease contagious? Lyme disease is not contagious. It does not spread from person to person. To become infected with the bacteria, a person must have been bitten by a tick that is infected with the bacteria. That's according to the CDC. In most cases, a tick must be attached for 36 to 48 hours or more before Lyme disease bacterium can be transmitted. Does Lyme disease go away? For most people, a course of antibiotics, around 2 to 4 weeks worth, will wipe out the infection with no long-term damage. However, for some people, Lyme disease may damage the heart, joints, or nervous system. When left untreated, Lyme disease can lead to a condition called Lyme carditis, which is when the bacterium infects any parts of the heart, which can lead to serious complications. When Lyme bacteria enters joint tissue, it can lead to joint swelling and inflammation known as Lyme arthritis. Some acute neurological complications of Lyme infection include aseptic meningitis, which is the inflammation of the meninges, or the lining that protects your brain and spinal cord. Other symptoms like numbness, pain, weakness, facial palsy, droop, paralysis of the facial muscles, and visual disturbance can occur. Even after Lyme disease has been treated, lasting symptoms may occur, Adler says. Some patients with long-term symptoms have dysregulated autonomic nervous system, which is the part of the nervous system that controls the heart rate and blood pressure, digestion, sweating, temperatures, and pupil size. Most people don't consciously think about these vital functions, but when this part of the nervous system does not work properly, it results in multiple symptoms, including dizziness when standing, weakness, brain fog, gastrointestinal symptoms too, among many other symptoms. Why do doctors not treat Lyme disease? This is a complicated question. Lyme disease, in its chronic form, has become controversial in recent years, not because Lyme disease doesn't exist, it does, or that it can't cause long-term issues, it can, but because some well-intentioned alternative medicine clinics may promote unproven diagnostic testing or treatments. Alder argues that these clinics thrive because traditional medical practices can leave patients behind. Alternative medical clinics are filling a huge unmet need for patients' care that our medical establishment has failed to address, she explains. Adler adds that one reason for this is the inexact diagnostic tools for Lyme. Lab testing for Lyme disease is imperfect, and physicians have little training in how to interpret the results. Diagnosing erythema migrans, the bullseye rash, can also be challenging for a community physician. Because of this, a lot of patients are misdiagnosed, which further adds to physicians' discomfort. Adler says this is the most confounding issue around chronic Lyme or dysautonomia diagnosis. A high problem is that the patient exam and labs are often normal, so the diagnosis is usually made based on symptoms, and it is much easier to attribute a long list of symptoms to anxiety or psychological disorders than to a disease that we have no exposure to. It's important to note that just because you've been bitten by a tick doesn't mean you're going to get Lyme disease. Most ticks are not infected with the disease-causing bacteria, although this can be region-dependent, and as mentioned above, they have to latch onto your skin for several days. You can protect yourself from ticks and other insects by simply wearing long sleeves and pants, using bug repellent, checking your skin regularly, and showering after being outside. By taking these precautions, you should be able to keep the bugs away. And we continue with health and wellness from usatoday.com. This article is entitled, How Many Calories Are in an Egg? A Quick Guide to the Nutrition Facts for Your Breakfast. Olivia Munson writes this for USA Today once again. Scrambled, hard-boiled, or over-easy eggs cooked anyway are a great protein alternative to meat. Often called a superfood, eggs are chock-full of key nutrients, including vitamin B12 and vitamin A. Now, whether you're using eggs as an ingredient in a larger dish or eating them on their own, it's helpful to know their nutrition information. Before you make this week's grocery list, here are some facts on the health benefits of eggs. Well, how many calories are in an egg? A large egg has around 77 calories. How much fat is in an egg? A large egg contains about 5 grams of total fat. How much protein is in an egg? Well, a large egg contains about 6 grams of protein. It is recommended that 10% to 35% of your daily caloric intake be comprised of protein. That's according to the Mayo Clinic. For instance, if you eat 2,000 calories a day, your protein intake should be between 50 and 175 grams. And still with USAToday.com, and this is from the entertainment section, Celine Dion attends the Rolling Stones concert and poses with Mick Jagger and Sons. Incredible. Taewon Worman writes this for USA Today. Celine Dion is getting out and about amid her health struggles, including at a Rocking Rolling Stones concert with her sons. The Canadian singer brought her 3 sons, Rene Charles Angel, 23, and twins Nelson and Eddie, they're 13, to the Stones Las Vegas concert on Saturday, posing with Mick Jagger after the show. "What an incredible show," Dion, who's 56, said in an Instagram post on Wednesday. "A very special thanks to Mick Jagger for warmly welcoming my family. You got us rocking." Dion wore a red long-sleeve dress to the concert, while her sons dressed casually and accessorized with backstage passes. Dion shared all 3 sons with her late husband, Rene Angel. In 2022, Dion was diagnosed with stiff person syndrome, making only a handful of public appearances since, including a hockey game with Rene Charles in October and a surprise appearance at the Grammy Awards in February. Last month, she opened up to Vogue France about the strenuous physical therapy that she has to undergo. "It's a lot of work, the My Heart Will Go On singer said. I didn't fight the disease. It is still in me and forever." She continued, "We will find, I hope, a miracle, a way to cure it with scientific research. But I must learn to live with it. So that's me now, with stiff person syndrome. 5 days a week, I do athletic, physical, and vocal therapy. I work on my toes as well as my knees, calves, fingers, and of course my singing voice." Dion said at the beginning of her diagnosis, she blamed herself and was searching for answers as to why of it all. "Life doesn't give you answers. You simply have to live with it. I have this disease for some unknown reason," she said. Dion said her family, children, and above all her fans have motivated her to find treatment that works. "People who suffer from stiff person syndrome may not have the chance or the means to have good doctors or good treatments," she acknowledged. "I have these means. I have this gift. Plus, I have this strength in me. I know nothing will ever stop me." More from USAToday.com. Again, this is on health and wellness, and the article is entitled, "My Dad Died 2 Years Ago of This Rare Fatal Disease. I Can't Stop Thinking About This Moment." David Oliver writes this for USA Today. I will never forget the moment my dad's eyes danced with recognition. One of the last times his bright blue eyes met mine and meant it. The sun poured in on that gorgeous spring day back in 2022 and pierced the dozen windows of our living room. It lit up the light green walls too and illuminated the bright teal kitchen backsplash. Woodpeckers pecked the gray siding outside. Birds chirped within the earshot of every bedroom. A tire swing, long unused, hung in the side yard. If I listened closely, I could hear a younger version of myself asking Dad to push me harder and faster. The living room TV stared back at us blank. The news was usually on in the morning at this hour if somebody was home. Dad was never here at this time on a weekday, but everything changed when he started showing symptoms of aphasia, yes, like Bruce Willis. That turned out to be the one in a million always fatal neurodegenerative condition known as Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. He died weeks later. Dad, why don't we go through the workout sheet? I urged, like I used to when I was a kid and needed help with math homework. My eighth grade math problem of the week became our problem of the week. But this time the workout wasn't mine, it was his. Homework from his speech pathologist. His aphasia kept getting worse, not better. He started forgetting things too quickly. The physicians he once was became a too distant memory. Dad, do you remember your name? Hey, Dad, what's your name? Mark, he said. Right, good. That's right. What about my name? Mark, he said, like he was trying to say David, but it was defeated. No one prepares you for when your parent looks at you and can't remember the name that they chose. I had first experienced this a few days earlier during another beautiful spring day on a walk through a park near my childhood home. I asked him my name after a trip around the large pond. After being warned, he might not remember. I didn't look at my reflection in the pool. I couldn't bear the horror that would reflect back at me. No, I'm David, I stammered. What about your wife's name? Mark? No, again. Lizzie. Her name is Lizzie, your wife of almost 31 years. No, what color is this folder? I asked, frustrated. Red. Yes. My blue eyes lit up like wave pools and met his. He looked at me, but almost threw me, not totally registering my presence, but not missing it either. Like he was stuck between two worlds. The speech pathologist gave us this red trick for whatever reason. When I'll research another time, asking him the color of this red folder grounds him, brings him down to earth from wherever his mind is at that point. Maybe he'll get better, I thought every time he gets this right, but then I ask him to name objects around the house, a remote, a blanket, and we're back at square one, repeating the name Mark or the color red, his favorite song. Dad, why don't we listen to some music? Maybe take five, he shrugged. I'm not sure whether he heard my question, but either way, it gave us both a break. Take Five by Paul Desmond is his favorite song, a jazz staple. I scrolled to my Spotify app and started playing it. The drum beats began. Then the saxophone swung in, the star of the show. Dad played professional jazz in the Catskill Mountains of New York many, many years prior and wouldn't let anybody forget it. He played the clarinet too in a trio with a flutist and a violinist for decades. He often pulled out either or both instruments for family gatherings like Passover for informal recitals. These memories swarmed my mind, musical notes leaping around like a plunge. Like a plague of frogs. Ta-da! Wait, he was singing along? The same man who can't say my name, my mom's name, sometimes not his own name, knew the tune of Take Five? He was smiling, but he was singing. Somewhere in the recesses of his brain that the CJD prion proteins were destroying, he remembered. He remembered playing Let My People Go at the Passover Seder, with unnecessary but beautiful jazzy trills. remembered visiting jazz clubs across New York City, probably hearing Take Five over and over again. Remembered reminding me to play the clarinet myself when I definitely haven't practiced, not once, even though my parents paid for private lessons. He looked at me this time, really at me. How was this possible? Why was this possible? Did it mean anything? I wish it did mean something, and that maybe he was getting better, that the music would somehow shock his brain into working well again, that he could say David without hesitation like he did for nearly 30 years of my life. What I gather it meant, CJD hadn't totally sucked the life out of him yet. The rapid decline was in full swing, of course, but it moved in slow motion too. In moments like this, both painstaking and poignant, melancholy and magnificent, terrible and true. Dad was dying, but he was also Dad. My dad. We took a break. Once the song finished, his eyes returned to that stuck place. I filmed his humming, though, and I'm glad I did so I can look back on it now. Do tears sting in my eyes? Yes. But 2 years later, I press play on Take Five and think of him. Sometimes I hear it out in the world and imagine him humming along, or better yet, jamming to it on his saxophone. Well, that concludes this, the third hour of USA Today. Again, it's May 16th, 2024. My name is Mary McConnell. Thank you.